Welcome to Shir Marav Gurari and Parshas Korach. So there's a well-known Rashi quoting a well-known Chazal in the very beginning of the Sedra. We'll briefly revisit that Rashi, and then we'll see the comments of the Gurari and that Rashi, which can give us hopefully some more insight into something which we may at least have encountered beforehand. So Rashi, in the very beginning of the Sedra, Gibra Maskel Adosan Vaviram, describes at length the way in which Korach went about rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu. So, Omad, again in the middle of the Rashi, it says, Omad, the Kineis Mosai v'chamish Roshi v'chamedros, Korach got together 250 heads of Sanhedrin, chosh of a people within Chal Yisrael, v'hilbishon palisos shekulam chaylos. And he gave these 250 individuals cloaks, chalisos, that were made entirely of chalas, the color of chalas in their entirety. So these 250 men, all wearing these blue-colored cloaks, came and stood in front of Moshe, Amru Lo, and they asked Moshe Rabbeinu, "Talis shekula shel chalas. If you have a talis, a cloak that's entirely made of a chalas color, Chayevus the tzitzis of Tura. Is it obligated in tzitzis with the string of chaylas? The strings of chaylas, depending on what yeshita is? Or is it exempt? Amar lahem chayevus?" So Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, said the halacha, that the palace is indeed chayev in tzitzis, even though it's obligated in tzitzis, even though the entirety of the garment is already of chaylas kala. His chilu is sachek alav. So these 250 people started to mock Moshe Rabbeinu. Esher talish shol min acher. Chotecha shol chelas posra. What are you telling me? If you have a talis that's made out of some other material, some other color, a single thread of chelas that you put in the tzitzis exempts the entire garment. So, shekul of chelas, well, tisor is asma. Doesn't it make sense that a talis that is entirely made out of chalas certainly shouldn't the many, many threads of chalas be sufficient to accomplish whatever the chalas is supposed to accomplish? And why should you need tzitzis for such a garment? You see, they basically claim that, you know, the laws of the Torah, or at least Moshe Rabbeinu's understanding of the laws of the Torah, are nonsensical, it doesn't make any sense, and clearly there needs to be a change in leadership. We also know Chazal bring a parallel story that not only do they ask Moshe Rabbeinu about a talis of kul of chelas, but they also ask him about a bayis mole svarim. They have a room that's medrash that's filled up with svarim in it. So chayevus the mezuzah, turim in a mezuzah. You need to put a mezuzah on the door of such a room that is filled up with svarim. And of course, Moshe Rabbeinu's response is yes. Again, assuming it's the base zero, assuming that it's the place where people live, it would be obligated in mezuzahs. But here too, they started mocking Moshe Rabbeinu and the laws of the Torah as Moshe Rabbeinu had taught them to them. If you know the whole house is filled up with svarim, the Sifrei Torah that have the parashios of Shema, the Hayoyim Shamoa, in these Sifrei Torah many, many times over, why is it necessary to have one small scroll with the parashios of Shema and the Hayoyim Shamoa? You know, it's the whole point is to have those parashios, you have those parashios many, many times over reflected in the svarim that are in the room. These laws don't make any sense. Again, time for a change in leadership. Right, so that's again two famous stories. The first is brought by Rashi. Two famous stories which describe how Korach was able to ferment the rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu.
What is the reason that we don't have
people don't live there? The Beit Medrash people live there. I mean, sometimes literally, right? But you know, the understanding is that the Medrash is a place where Talmud Chacham can eat, can drink, can sleep. You know, I mean, the yeshivas in Europe, that was the dormitory. You know, they turned over a bench and they went to sleep, you know, in the shul. So you're not allowed to sleep in the shul, you're not allowed to eat in the shul, you're not allowed to sleep in to drink in the shul. Okay. Comes to Maral with a very interesting question. In Talmud, after Maral, The Korach Mahayasavur, when Korach sent up these 250 people to ask this question, what did Korach anticipate the answer as being? So he goes as follows. In Tawishel Cheles Tzura Minatzitzis, right? If Korach really thought that a talus that was entirely made out of talus would be exempt from tzitzis, Shema Moshe Gamke Yoshiv Shehi Tzura. So who knows? Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu will say it's exempt from tzitzis. Ve'ein tam makom l'machlokes shelohem. And, you know, unfortunately, if Moshe Rabbeinu gives what Korach anticipates as being the quote-unquote right answer, so then they don't have a machlokes, right? The whole machlokes only works if Moshe Rabbeinu gives what, you know, they perceive as being a silly answer. Let's say Moshe Rabbeinu says that it's hakapotah, that it's indeed, you know, going to be exempt from tzitzis. If, on the other hand, Korach felt that the talus, which was entirely talus, was actually going to be chayev in tzitzis, which is indeed the case. In other words, he was anticipating that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to answer what he answered, and therefore they were just going to make fun of that answer. In came the Nolan Lahem Sparazos. So how did Korach know that a talus which would be entirely chayev would be chayev in tzitzis? In Yesh Svara L'chayev, in came Shema Moshe Yashiv L'em Gamke HaSvara. If there is indeed a reason that one can explain for the talus being entire, you know, the talus being chayev in tzitzis, even if it's entirely made out of chayev, so maybe Moshe Rabbeinu will give that Svara, that reasoning. And again, Lo Yelam Makom Lachlok, right? And they won't have a basis for the machlokas. It's interesting in terms of, just to pause and reflect on the kasha of the Maral for a moment. I think, generally speaking, most of us when we read this Rashi, we understand this balance. Korach already knows that a talus is cool of cheles, that the talus which is entirely blue is higher than tzitzis, right? But, you know, his whole point of, it's not that he was unsure what the halacha is, he knew what the halacha was, but yet this was a setup in order to show everyone how nonsensical the halachas are, again, from his perspective. So that seems to be the straightforward understanding of the Medrash. Why doesn't the Maharal see it that way? I mean, what's the point of the question, according to the Maharal? So perhaps, you know, what you see from this Maharal is that the Maharal gives Korach more credit than maybe we do offhand. In other words, Korach also, again, at least according to the question of the Maharal, Korach wasn't just coming sort of flippantly and dismissing the halacha, right? Korach wasn't quite sure, according to the Maharal, Korach wasn't quite sure, or at least it seems, what the answer was going to be when he had the 250 men pose the question. And although he was bristling for a machlokas with Moshe, it wasn't so much that he was bristling for a machlokas on what was accepted to be the halacha. He wanted to show that Moshe interpreted the halacha erroneously. Right? So in other words, Moshe's svara doesn't make sense. In other words, in a certain sense, the Maharal is presenting the debate between Moshe and Korach as the debate between two Rosh and Yeshiva. You know, Moshe has his svara, and Korach has his svara, and, you know, the point of view that Korach is presenting is not this whole system of halakha makes no sense. The point of view that Korach is presenting is that the Moshe Rabbeinu is not the ideal person to properly interpret the Torah. His shiurim don't make any sense. His svaras don't make any sense. Right? It's a much, it gives a lot more credit to Korach, the question of the Maharal, that I think we oftentimes would assume just on our own, reading the story. Truth be told, again, there are many sources, again, including many Rashis here, that when we read them and reread them, give us a higher appreciation of Korach than we might think offhand. Korach b'keach hoya. Right? Rashi says Korach was a very, very wise man. If anything, you have to try to understand what would have motivated Korach to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Korach was not a nasty, dastardly villain, you know, the way we sometimes might be tempted to portray him. Korach was an Adam Gadol. He was a great person. He was a great person who was decided, but he was a great person. The Maharal takes that into account. His question against Moshe Rabbeinu was a question to which he may not necessarily have known the answer going in. So if he didn't know the answer going in, how do you know that the answer that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to give is necessarily going to spark a machlokas? Right? So don't tell me, says the Maharal, like we probably would have assumed that they already knew, coming and asking the question, that the talis was going to be higher than tzitzis, and you know the point was just to come and make a machlokas. What do they come and do? The 250 men, they don't come and say, we learned this halacha doesn't make any sense. They ask the question. So they ask the question, says the Maharal, the fact that they're asking the question means that they're not necessarily sure what the answer is. Now again, I think most of our inclination would probably be to say, no, the question is what we call a setup. They're posing questions to Moshe Rabbeinu because we're not being told to think what the answer is going to be. So again, the Maharal's just as smart as we are, it's not a lot smarter, right? So the Maharal also could understand that the question could potentially be a setup. But again, the reluctance of the Maharal to describe the question as a setup that they didn't actually know the answer to is probably because, again, the Maharal is coming from the point of view that Korach is a great person. And to just ask a question when you know the answer, a great person wouldn't do that. Even a misguided great person wouldn't do something of that nature. Right? I'm always just reminded in this regard, it's just not related to the Maharal, of Rashi and Pashas Vayeshev, when the brothers throw Yosef into the pit. So they say, we're going to throw him into the pit. V'nira nayu chalomotos. And let's see what's going to be with his dreams. So Rashi their comments, you can't understand that pasuk as being said by the brothers, because obviously once they throw him into the pit, what do you mean, let's see what's going to be of his dreams? Obviously, dreams are not going to come true as far as they're concerned. So it must be, says Rashi, that was the Ruach HaKodesh, that was God saying, we will see that his dreams are yet going to be fulfilled even though you're trying to thwart them. And I think, I don't know about you, I know I always read that Rashi, I always had a very hard time with that Rashi. What do you mean? It's very obvious what the brothers are saying. It's sarcastic. The Nira Mayu Chalamotah will throw him into the pit. And we'll see what's going to be with his dreams, right? I mean, that seems to be obviously the chat in the pasuk. Why is Rashi so quick to say, it can't be the brothers saying it, that must be Ruach HaKodesh. And the answer seems to be that Rashi too is ascribing a greater level to the shvatim than you and I might think. Well, it's just read the psukim. Inconceivable, says Rashi, that the brothers would just be rubbing their hands with glee and saying, ha ha ha, let's see what's going to be with their dreams, right? Because the ships they call, they don't talk like that. Even they might think that their brother is deserving of being thrown into a pit, but they're not sarcastic, You have to be on a pretty low madrega to be sarcastic. That's what you see. So if you have such a phrase in the pasuk, the only way the phrase can be understood, says Rashi, is in some non-sarcastic fashion that is being expressed by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and not Chas V'Shalom. Rashi can't even imagine that the Shlatim would be speaking in such a sarcastic fashion. I think this is somewhat similar in this Maharal, that the Maharal can't even imagine that Korach would go and ask a question that would be a setup, that he already knows the answer to. The Eirae, so it would seem as follows, Some of the Maharal was a very, very interesting shot. Again, not what you would necessarily think in Rashi. Says the Maharal, when Korach and the 250 men asked the question, is the talis that all chelas exempt from tzitzis or higher than tzitzis? They were anticipating that the answer would be, it's exempt. And then they had a follow-up question. Based on their assumption that it would probably be exempt, they wanted to claim as follows. You see, just like a talus that's entirely chelas doesn't need tzitzis, so too Klal Yisrael, who are kulam kedoshim, who are all holy, don't need a special person, a unique person, to function as a Kohen Gadol, to be the most kadosh, you know, the greatest among equals. We don't need somebody like that. Just like the talus is kulam chelas, doesn't require tzitzis, so to Klal Yisrael shekulam kedoshim don't require Kohen Gadol. The only problem was they asked the kasha, and Moshe Rabbeinu, quote unquote, gave the wrong answer. And then they were all taken aback. So the only response they had at that point was to make fun of the answer. Well, that doesn't make any sense. But that wasn't their original intention, says the Maharal. It wasn't the setup. They were anticipating that he would give a different answer, and then they would give a drasha based on that answer. But Right, so the svara behind it, which the Maral again assumes is the svara of Shuta, is that the whole point of the tzitzis is to have the tchelos. Here, right, like the Mishnah Bracha says, the point of the tchelos is to remind us, ultimately, the Kisayach Kavod, right? So here you have a begish, a kula tchelos it has, the tchelos in it. What's that?
If it only has three kulas, it would be possible.
Right, no, but I think he's saying like it's a little bit like Shin and Taim of the Crow. In other words, Korach, you know, was, you know, working off of what he understood to be the reason for the mitzvah. The reason for the mitzvah is to have that tefillah tchelas. But if you have 100 tefillah tchelas, this is part of the derged, so that should do the trick. Now again, as you're pointing out, there's a pretty good response to that, which is that, you know, lo dashin and time of the crow. In other words, we don't necessarily explain our lachos based on the reasoning for the mitzvah. The Torah says, put tzitzis on a garment that has four quarters. Okay, and the story, you know, it was to make drashas as to why you think in this case it wouldn't apply. But again, that's the Maral says it's a svar of shuta, that it should have been exempt. At least they thought it was a svar of shuta. And they were shocked when Moshe Rabbeinu came back and he said that it was chayes, right, that it was obligated. The near Loma. Right. So according to this initial understanding of the Maral, at least on the surface, the Taina was not make me Kohen Gadol instead of Aaron. The Taina was, you know, nobody should be Kohen Gadol. The truth is in the Pesukim. That is what it sounds like. Kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. You know, he didn't say Madua Tisnasu Atem Al Kahal Hashem. This not say Anaku Al Kahal Hashem. No, that wasn't his response, right? Kulayo, you know, it's democracy. Kulayo, Kulam Kedoshim. We don't need a leader. You know, everybody's equal. Everybody's gonna, you know, have an equal say in terms of coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Nira Lomar continues the Maral developing this idea. Shulagari Hayakarach Madama Osom Yachav. The truth is, Korach really compared the case of the talus that was entirely tailless to Klal Yisrael in a very, very exact way. It's interesting how you have two brothers who are running Klal Yisrael, Moshe and Aaron, and each of them has a different tafkid, each of them has a different role, as follows. Aaron HaKohen, says the Maral, is in charge of the deeds of Klal Yisrael. He's, again, in his words, Miyashir Ma'aseyim Sho Yisrael Bavodas HaMaisa. He straightens out the deeds of the Jewish people on a practical level. How does he do that? Well, he brings karbonos, or he supervises the bringing of karbonos, right? And those karbonos are mechaper, they atone for the sins of Klal Yisrael. We might add to the Maharal that we know from Chazal that Aaron did this in other ways as well. It was an Oer Shalom Barodeh Shalom. He went around trying to make people do the right thing in a much more everyday, a much more pedestrian kind of fashion. But that was the role of Aaron, to work on mitzvah, to work on the deeds of the people. In contrast, as the Maharal, Moshe Rabbeinu's focus
was not so much on the deeds of the people, but on the learning of the people. He was the one who was transmitting Torah to the Jewish people. He wanted to make sure that intellectually they were aware of what to do, and then the practical stuff, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was theory, Aaron HaKohen was practice. So, Aaron Memuna Ikara Ala Maise, Moshe Ala Talmud. Right? Aaron's forte was to be involved in practicality. Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in theory. The higher Karach maybe the Raya in Sikhla Shneya. Lola Maise, Lola Talmud. The fact that Korah brought two examples before Klal Yisrael was meant to be aimed at both Moshe and Aaron. Okay, let's go back to what we spoke about before. There are two stories of how Korach's representatives asked Moshe Rabbeinu a question which, you know, to which they dismissed Moshe's answer as being silly. Right? There's the case of the Kalash Shekula Prelas, and there's the case of the Bayus Mole Sparim, of the house, of the room, that still got with Sparim, does it need a mezuzah? Why do we need both stories? Well, why do they have to ask it, you know, a similar type of kasha twice? Okay, so the simple answer might just be, you know, if you're running a PR machine, you know, you want to try to get as many statements out there as possible, you know, so this is a ridiculous law as far as they're concerned, that's a ridiculous law as far as they're concerned. But says the Maharal, no, the two examples are chosen very, very deliberately. Why? Kavi rising in the palace of Kula Tela Tel Arisha, Mumun Ala Maisa. The Fishanissa, this is Gamke, Nito, with Hainkal, and this is Shalakadish Baruchu, Shinemar Urisim also, who's the Chayatem of Kamisko Tashem Vasisa. The role of Tzitzis as a mitzvah is to get us to do the mitzvahs in a practical sense. Look at the Tzitzis, do the mitzvot, right? It's all about practicality. So therefore, says Korach, well, oh my Korach, how should Kula Tchela Tzura Chayeves? The soul that she on of Tzura, how should Kula Yitzchela? Ain't a three kochut akher. L'chaim bo z'chaitev asisim of kol mitzvot Hashem? Hachanami kol yisrael kulam kedosh v'avodot HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'ein ol tzrikum l'karin akher gankin. If tzitzis, the idea of the talis represents a devotion to practically carrying out the mitzvot, so when we have a talis shekula chelas, in other words, all of Klal Yisrael are equally poised to be able to do mitzvot properly, we don't need the tzil chelas, we don't need the Kohen Gadol, the Aaron HaKohen who's focused on Maisa as a leader, in order to get the people to do what's right. Everyone on their own can do what's right. That's the focus of Talis Shekula Chelas in that example. The second example of the Bayis Mole Sparim is directed, according to the Maharal, not at Aaron, but at Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the focus in that second example is not practical, it's theoretical. It's focusing on learning. If you have so much learning in one room, do I need a little mezuzah that represents a fraction of the total learning, the total Torah power that's in that room? That was oriented, says the Maharal, towards Moshe Rabbeinu. Because he may call, as he puts it, he may call Yisrael Meleim Torah Usparim. Everybody is a Talmud Chacham, says Korah. Therefore, ein tzrichim mezuzah, klona she'ein turim me'oso amulamig lahem Torah. You don't need someone to teach you Torah. Everyone can plumb the depths of Torah by themselves. You don't need, to put it in contemporary terms, you don't actually need Moses. You just need a computer and ask Moses. And you'll be yosher that way. All you gotta do is ask the Rabbi Google. You'll get all the answers that you could possibly get. And, you know, you'll learn the Sfarim by themselves, you know, you don't need a Rebbe to be able to teach you the Torah. Ki einam tzrichim shum emtsa'i, they don't need any middleman to teach them Torah. Shekulam chachamim v'shalmum fi adgura anochi, right, they heard Hashem say, and har sinai anochi Hashem alokecha, umad tzorich le'emtsa'i, right, and, you know, they don't need an intermediary to teach them Torah. Every Jew can learn Torah as well as he possibly can on his own. So we don't need Aaron in order to get us to be better people. We don't need Moshe to get us to be better learners, right? And those are the two examples, says the Maharal, of those two stories. They're not just repetitious. Each one has a very specific kavana in mind, a very specific intent in mind that Korach is getting at, right? So he just adds, "Mashi Purish Rashi Shloya Chokir Al Moshe Rachel Aruf." That which Rashi says in Pasuk Gimel, "He will cast the Ato Malchus Vohayu Lachol Avar Lasicha Kuhuna." You Moshe Rabbeinu, it's enough that you're the king. You shouldn't have made your brother the Kohen Gadol, which sounds like, on the surface, they didn't have a problem with Moshe Rabbeinu. It was more with Aaron. So Al Korcha Vohayu Chokin Dankin Al Moshe. Says the Maharal, you can't say that they only had a complaint to Aaron, but not against Moshe. Shari Amu Elav Al Dara Zelo Saveisa. Because after all, they tell Moshe Rabbeinu, you weren't told to put Aaron in that place. So ultimately, it's a taina on Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Ela Alan Siuso Lo Haya Cholek Avol Haya Cholek Al Torosso. So this is again a very interesting interpretation of what Korach complained against Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't mind that you're the leader. Okay, we understand there needs to be a leader in Klal Yisrael, but you're just a bureaucrat, Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, you're not the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so you'll fill out all the insurance forms on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Right? Okay, we need somebody to be the leader in a political sense, but to be the Rebbe of Klal Yisrael, Klal Yisrael doesn't need a Rebbe. Kol Ha'edom, Kol Kedoshim. We can all learn. We can all learn by ourselves. We don't need somebody to teach us. Right? And says the Maharal, that's really the depth of what Korach is complaining about. He's not complaining again, according to Maharal, he's not complaining about leadership in the socio-political sense, but he's complaining against both Aaron and Moshe about their religious roles as leaders. Aaron as a leader in Maisa, Moshe as a leader in Talmud, right? We don't need leaders in those religious realms, we can do it all by ourselves. As I shall pick up after Maharal, we'll get another idea from the Maharal, and we'll continue then. We're the Commandment of Kasha Omer. Welcome to the second part of the Shir Maral Goryaye Parshas Korach. So, I want to just do a brief thought from the Maral, which is a very, very powerful thought. So, Perek Tazayin, Pasuk Chav Zayin, is describing the confrontation between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu as it builds up. And it says, Vayeyalu me'al mishkan korach dosan va'aviram misoviv. People separated themselves from the encampment of Korach, Dothan, Aviram. The Dothan, the Aviram, Yosu, Nitzavim, Pesach, O'Aleim, Unashem, Uvaneim, V'tachom. And Dothan and Aviram stood outside their tents, together with their wives, their children, presumably meaning their older children, and their infants. And unfortunately, as we're going to see, as the ground opens up and swallows them up, it swallows up, as the Pasuk goes on to say, not only them, but their entire families, right? And them, their wives, their children, adult children, very little children, toddlers, infants. So Rashi comments on the shame of the name of Tapam, Bo Ure'e Kama Kosha Hamachlokas. Right? How do you come and see how terrible machlokas, how terrible debate, or not debate, strife, you know, disputes are. Shredezin shomacha in onshin ashiyavish beisaros, because after all, in an earthly court, you can only be punished after you've reached an age of majority. In other words, a minor is not going to be punished in an earthly court. Ubezdin Shomala ad Esrim Shana, and in the heavenly court they wait even longer, as they wait till the person has turned 20. The Kan Ovdu Atiyom Ke Shodayim. And here in this case we see that when the punishment of Machlokas was visited upon Korach and his group, even the nurslings, even the very, very small children were swept away in this rage of machlokas. You see, machlokas is such a terrible thing. Even innocent children, I mean, what do? Even the innocent children are swept up in the fires of machlokas.
comes the Maharal, just on a technical point, first of all, Apple Gav, the Kroz, the Hokilo, Ayrib, the Weas, Abon, and Batat, Ela Ayrib, and Mashi, also, we saw them, Hum, and all, on Lil Mod, and he says, Shafak, Tanim, then, Shu. The Maharal first starts off by quoting the Kasha of the Mizrahi, where he says, this is a very strange place for Rashi to make this comment. Because if Rashi was commenting on the fact that the whole camp of Korach was swallowed up, including the little children, the comment would be relevant. But here we're not talking about the punishment. Here we're talking about the fact that Dasan Aviram and their families went and stood outside their tents in confrontation with Moshe Rabbeinu. We're not talking about the punishment yet. So to make a comment about how terrible Machlokas is, that the punishment of Machlokas is visited upon the children, maybe a true comment, it doesn't really belong over here. It would make more sense to make that statement when the actual punishment happens. Says the Maharal, just on a technical level, the reason Rashi makes the comment over here is as follows. Why does the Torah bother telling us that Dasan Aviram, with their families, even their infants, went and stood outside their tents? What's the point of that? The point can only be that when the Pasuk goes on later on to say that Hein v'chol asher lahem, that they and all that they had were swallowed up by the earth, it means they and anyone who was standing next to them. Right? So, in other words, this Pasuk is laying the groundwork, right? It's laying the groundwork for what we're going to understand later on. So this is an appropriate place for Rashi to make the comment about how terrible Machlokas is, that even the little children are punished as a result. Okay, that's just on a technical level. On a more fundamental level, goes on the Maharal to ask, in Tomer, my shnoch hates them called Hatoim Shiva Omam, Shena Kotan Enash. Okay, Rashi makes a comment, he makes a statement. Even little children are punished for the sin of Machlokas. But follow-up question, why? Why should that be so? I mean, they are innocent. Right? No one's questioning no one's saying that they're guilty. So if they're innocent, why should they be punished? That doesn't really seem fair. Yes, l'chol odas ikir atam, kimash in ha'kotam nenas, in ha'kodesh baruch hu maybe onesh al ha'kotam. The reason is as follows, says the Maharal. In general, a child is never punished because punishment is not relevant to a child who's done who doesn't understand that which he's done. Avon machlokas, shenkuf ha-gehenem zavik v'machlokas, ki ha-gehenem v'machlokas nifru v'yom shen v'mayis v'breshes, v'odiya ki ha-machlokas v'gof ha-gehenem, v'lachein nenash ad ha-kotam, ki ha-onesh bo me'asmo. Says the Maharal, the destruction that comes about from controversy, it's not a punishment, it's a consequence. It's a natural consequence of people fighting. When people fight, destruction comes into the world. The Maharal makes the observation that on the second day of creation, when we know the whole concept of Machlokas was created, in other words, God separated the upper waters from the lower waters, the whole idea of separation, of strife, of things being torn apart, that was also the day on which Gehenna, purgatory, was created. In other words, and it's not by accident, says the Maharal, because the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world in such a way so that Machlokas and Gehenna are always tied to one another. Whenever there's Machlokas, by definition, that brings a little bit of the scent of Gehenna into the situation. So in other words, says the Maharal, it's not that the children are being punished, but, you know, if a bunch of little children jump into a raging fire, it's not that they're punished by being hurt, but they will be hurt. It's not a punishment, it's simply a consequence of going to a place that carries those dire consequences with it. If you get involved in Machlokas, it unleashes Gehenna, and yes, there will be innocent children who can be impacted upon by that terrible state of affairs. It's not a punishment. It happens by itself, says the Maharal.
Would you say that
Korach have
no descendants at this time?
Dasan Aviram don't have descendants. Korach his children survive. Right? That's unless that was a Korach Mizma. Right. Yes, so in other words, when Haman and his 10 sons, so the Midrashim said that the 10 sons were not his only children. They might have been the most politically active of his children, right? They were the ones who were hanging around, I guess, for the longest. But, you know, they, according to the Midrashim, I think the Midrashim said he had 30 children, 70 children, or a whole bunch of, a lot of kids that he had. These were just, this was just the tip of the iceberg, you know, the 10 who were killed. Apparently not. Yeah, again, the Midrashim does say there were other children. They fled. They got out of town. You know, it was probably a smart thing to do. So, you know, the ones who were learning in Bnei Brak, is according to, you know, according to the Gemara. So, those either were from different children, or these children who were hanged, you know, were not little children. They had already had families, and their descendants were able to, you know, the line was not broken. It was just that these individuals were hanged. Right? Again, the terrible results of the machlokas are just a natural consequence. They're not really a punishment. Hamashal, for example, right? If a person says, Reuven says to Shimon, I'm not going to hurt you. But if you decide to go and hurt yourself, don't blame me. A person who gets involved in a machlokas is essentially hurting himself. Whatever happens as a result is self-inflicted, and it's not even a punishment. It's the natural consequence of drawing close to machlokas. Kach inyan machlokas. Kevon shenivra gehenim im machlokas who may be asma la'onesh, kilo nikuz there may be onesh alav, rakol ba machlokas makomo ha-miyuchad lo hu agehenim. You should know, if a person gets involved in a machlokas, his place, the place that belongs to him, is Gehenim. So nivra imo im kem hu shayich lo, machlokas and Gehenim go together, and a person who gets involved in machlokas belongs to Gehenim, because that's the natural linkage between Gehenna and Machlokas. No, I don't think he means like that. Gehenna in this terminology over here, I think just means all kinds of bad things that are unleashed. Right? In other words, you know, you get involved in Machlokas, the fires of Gehenna, bad things are going to happen. So in this case, the very opening of the earth itself, you know, is Gehenna.
Right.
Yeah, right. In other words, again, whatever it means to make shalom with the celestial bodies is obviously something, you know, beyond our full comprehension. But yeah, on some level that we learn from that, you know, what God is doing up there to try to make peace on a human level. What the Maharal doesn't quite say, but I think it's implicit in the Maharal, is the following, and it's a frightening idea. A Baal Machlokas is impacted negatively, even if he's right. In other words, it's not a question of you're right or wrong. Again, if it was a question of punishment, a person who's right is exonerated, a person who's wrong is punished. Right? So says the Maharal, again, this you know, beautiful but frightening yourself, says the Maharal. Right. In other words, the bad things, the bad consequences that come about as a result of being involved in machlokas are not punishments. So they're not dependent on right or wrong, they're not dependent on deserving or undeserving. If you're playing with machlokas, you're playing with fire. Literally. So good. So you're right. Doesn't matter. Right? And again, it's a tremendous yisod, which is very easy to say over and very difficult to actually apply in life, especially if you're one of the Baalei Machlokas, right? It doesn't really matter whether you're right or wrong. If you are involved in a Machlokas, you will be hurt, right? Almost inevitably, as a consequence of being involved in a Machlokas, you will be hurt as a result. And again, we'd be well suited to take that to heart you know, it's not just about he's right, I'm right, they're right, you know, it doesn't really matter. In the end of the day, we're all going to get hurt.
You know, somebody said he's saying about why is it that among the Ashkenazim, reformed conservatives in Belarus, started with him. So somebody said a theory in front of a government, Shiva, and he didn't disagree with it. He seemed to have agreed with it. He said, this guy's kind of was, he's what he said a good time about today. He said that the reason why among Ashkenazim you have reformed conservatives because Machlokes seems to have been an outgrowth, in other words, it was an outgrowth of constant Machlokes. This one said this, this one said that, this one said this, this one said that. There were two sides all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then most of them came home and said, I'm also not a gay, I'll be my gay. And then it all happened. But as far as him, whatever Maran said, that's it. The final halacha is the Maran. And that's when he kind of got the most started. He never found out the form of his service.
He said,
because of the form of
So in other words, it's interesting, again, the Machlok is Shalom Lashem Shalayim, it's Karach V'chol Adasa. What do you mean? Karach and Moshe. No, in other words, Karach V'chol Adasa, they're the Baalei Machlokas. In this particular case, Moshe Rabbeinu has done nothing wrong and doesn't seek Machlokas and really shies away from Machlokas. And, you know, we see it's not really scathed by what happened, but it's the ones who start off, you know, Karach V'chol Adasa, who are punished in such a terrible fashion. Okay, well, wish everyone good Shabbos. We'll see everyone next week. That's Hashem, Wednesday night.